afternoon, and remember to welcome to Remember When, where we talk about the people, places, and events that brought us to where we are today. Our show today is sponsored by the Maritime Museum of British Columbia. My name is Glenn Parfitt. I'm filling in for Susan Woods, who's running for city council in the upcoming civic election. For more information about Sue and what she's doing in her bid, check out her website. It's SusanWoodsForVictoria.com. A little more information about what she's up to. And she'll be working on that till, of course, election day, I believe, is the 15th of November. So good luck with her on that. And I'm your host today, filling in for the next few weeks as well, too. We had a great show here last week. We spoke with Ron Atfield about Victoria's original rock and roll band, and certainly that was a fun topic. Some interesting things today in history. In 1987, Scotland, after spending... It was about $1.6 million hoping to prove or disprove the legend of the Loch Ness Monster. The three-day search for it ended, and of course, they did not find the Loch Ness Monster. And that was this day in 1987. Also 33 years ago today, 1975, was the first broadcast show of Saturday Night Live. So two things to think about. So we'll be asking trivia questions later on, give away some cool prizes. And... chance to learn more about what's going on with history, certainly locally today with our guests. My brothers Dwayne and Daryl Parfitt will be speaking about the Parfitt family and their emigrating to Victoria and how they got here and some of the buildings that during their time as Parfitt Brothers Construction and basically how they shaped the city's original skyscape, I guess it was. I refer to it as. One more thing I want to mention up too. Today, part of our theme with our family is about music and some of the original music that they brought. Last week, my theme was about music. So just to bring people up to speed, there's a mayoral candidate meeting at the Royal Theatre on Sunday, November 2nd at 7 p.m. And it's hosted by ProArt, the Professional Arts Alliance of Greater Victoria. So if you're a big fan of local art, whether it be dance, music, our art gallery, whatever your art preface is that you like to enjoy locally, here's a chance to come down and hear it from the mayoral candidates on their views and their vision of the future for the arts in Greater Victoria. And again, that's Sunday, November the 2nd, 7 p.m. at the Royal Theatre, and it is free admission, so take advantage of that. It's sponsored by our good friends at the Times Colonist. As I spoke earlier and mentioned, I was going to talk about the my family, the Parfitt family. They were a large family of brothers and sisters that originated in Carlingcott, England. My great-grandfather, Aaron Parfitt, had these wonderful children. And I think it was about 1889, three of the their children decided that they wanted to emigrate to San Francisco. Carlingcott, England was where they came from. You have to remember at that time, their main industry there was coal, and the only work that there really was in coal mines, and it really sort of was bleak working conditions there. And after hearing all these stories about what was happening in North America, they felt it was really a chance to kind of go across the oceans and check it out. So three of the brothers, James, Aaron, and Fred, boarded a ship to Montreal and made their way across. They got kind of seasick on the way, though. But they did feel well enough, and they did play their violins and cellos to the passengers on board. It was also part of how they paid passage across. From Montreal, they journeyed across Canada by train, headed for Vancouver. And then from there, their idea was to head south and go to San Francisco. But in a meeting with an ardent admirer of our great city, Victoria, the men decided to go on over and have a little look and see what this wonderful place this fella told them about. Saying it was probably the most beautiful place in the world. So I guess it was about 8:30 p.m. on July the 6th, 1889. They showed up, liked what they saw, and stayed. Now, later on, they had two other brothers join them. After they'd spent some time here working and finding out what it was all about, they picked up odd jobs along the way when they were here, and it was kind of a little sparse at the beginning. They were doing mostly labor work. And when they weren't, working, doing things like packing bricks on the construction site of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church, they would go out to Lake Hill, walk out to Lake Hill, and they would cut firewood, and that's how they would make money. So if things got a little slow for them, that's how they did it. Joined later on by their two brothers. And then on 1907, things really began to change. Fortunately, you know, they had Albert and James join them, or I think it's Albert and Mark join them. But in 1907, that was when the Great Fire broke out in Victoria, 1923. It was at store in Chatham Street, and it was a restaurant. And it was right in the middle of what's known as Chinatown right now. And they were all sort of like hastily built wooden homes and buildings sort of in the area. So once this fire took hold, it really raged and went right across Douglas Street so far. Went up to the Meadowland on the east side of Blanchard Street. So that would have been on the other side of the Memorial Arena. So all of a sudden, the whole town's looking for builders, and there's a tremendous need. So three of the brothers, Jim and Aaron, went down to the customs office, and in June of 1908, started the firm of Perfect Brothers Construction. And that's where our stories were all going to begin this afternoon. We're going to talk more about that with my two brothers and some of the different buildings that they built after they got here in Victoria and started their construction company. We're also going to have a little fun playing a little trivia today as well, too. So just before we go to break, we're going to give you one of our trivia questions. And we've got, an oil change courtesy of our good friends at Alpine Transmission and Auto Repair in Langford for the person who can answer this trivia question when we come back from break. As I mentioned earlier, Saturday Night Live, 33 years old today in history. The first broadcast featured a well-known comedian who unfortunately passed away within this last year. And he was the original guest host in the first episode of Saturday Night Live 33 years ago today. If you know who that person is, give us a call at 386-1161. And we'll put you on hold, and then we'll get you on the line. If you've got the right answer, we're going to give you an oil change courtesy of Alpine Transmission Auto Repair out in Langford. So we're going to go to a break right now, and if you've got any other questions for us about our topic today or short stories that you want to share, you can give us a call at the same number, 250-386-1161. You can also call in on your cell at *1070, and we'll pay the charges. So we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back.
The Maritime Museum is now offering programs that can be delivered in the classroom, library, boardroom, or just about anywhere else the class or group meets. It's called Museum Without Walls and features life and work aboard ship, three tales of women at sea, and immigration on the BC coast. All programs are delivered by museum staff. For information, call 385-4222 extension 106 or email programs at mmbc.bc.ca.
Hey, British Columbia, it's Dr. Steve Farron. Good Feet Stores are changing lives 2 feet at a time. Just like building, a poor foundation can cause all kinds of problems to the structure. At Good Feet, our arch supports support your foundation, allowing for a better alignment, helping to relieve the pain and discomfort you're dealing with.
Give them 10 minutes and they could change your life. Step into the Good Feet Store on Blanchard next to Jordan's Furniture. The Good Feet Store. Your comfort is their passion.
Why is Stéphane Dion pushing a carbon tax now? I can't afford to pay more for gas.
Never mind just gas. This carbon tax is going to make everything more expensive.
I work for a small business. If their costs go up, I lose my job.
The last thing we need is another tax. It's the last thing we need, especially with everything going on in the States.
Well, if Dion's so smart, why do his policies make no sense?
Trust me, he's the last guy you want making decisions on taxes and spending.
Stéphane Dion, no plan for the economy. Not worth the risk. Authorized by the registered agent of the Conservative Party of Canada.
You could be a superhero in the life of a child, and you don't have to change your life to change theirs. Big Brothers Big Sisters is looking for 170 volunteer mentors for in-school mentoring programs. In as little as 1 hour per week, you can make a difference. Call 475-1117 or visit bbbsvictoria.com to learn more about how you can volunteer, participate in events, or donate. Big Brothers Big Sisters of Victoria. Looking for mentors like you.
Greater Victoria is home to many unsung heroes. Honor them with a CFAX 1070 citation rose. Just go to CFAX1070.com.
Welcome back. Glenn Parfitt sitting for Susan Woods. Susan is away until the 15th of November, and she'll be back after that. She's currently running for city council. And if you want to know more about what Sue's up to, you can always check out her website at www.susanwoodsforvictoria.com. And you can see what she's up to and her different stands on the different topics, and certainly learn more about it. Now, we're talking today with my brothers about Parfit family history, but just before we went to break, we had a trivia contest, so we're going to see if we've got an answer. We've got Debbie on the line. Hello, Debbie. Is this Debbie?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Debbie. And the question that we asked was, who was the first host on Saturday Night Live, which aired 33 years ago today?
I think it's George Carlin.
You are absolutely correct. And for you, we've got a oil change courtesy of our friends at Alpine Transmission and Auto Repair out in Langford. And thank you very much for listening. And we'll put you on hold for a sec. And we'll give you to our producer. And he will take care of your information. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks very much.
All right. We're just moving along here to our next call. I believe... No, we're not. Okay, we're done there for now, and we've got her on hold, and thank you very much, Debbie, for calling in. Our guests in the studio today are my brothers, Daryl and Dwayne Parfit. Dwayne is the oldest of the three of us. Daryl, in the middle between the two of us, myself, the youngest. We grew up in this wonderful, Parfit family that we've been talking about earlier on, and my oldest brother, Dwayne, is going to share some memories. First of all, let's welcome both of my brothers to the show. Welcome, Dwayne and Daryl, for coming in this afternoon.
Hey, Glenn. It's great. It's always nice to come back to Victoria for
a visit. You bet. My brother Dwayne lives out of town up in beautiful Port Alberta, but he's come down to share some stories and information for us today. So, Dwayne, you've got some information about one of the buildings, and certainly it's I'll let you speak more about it, and it's Christ Church Cathedral.
Yes. Christ Church Cathedral is an incredible building. I have been through it a few times, and it really stands out as a monument in Victoria. I am pleased that the family was involved in this. In fact, when the contract was let back in 1926, the contract was the second largest contract ever awarded for a building in Victoria, next to the Parliament buildings. This contract was somewhere in the order of about $300,000, which doesn't seem like a lot in today's environment. But I was going to just read something that my grandfather wrote that, when they were doing different jobs, he would always cost everything out. And when I get into my next one, I'll tell you what some of those costs were. It'll surprise you. But Christ Church Cathedral was a huge, huge building and a big contract. That was their contract, and they did such a great job. I've seen pictures of the construction of it and the actual scaffolding. You look at the size of the blocks on that thing, and in today's standards, we have lots more technology available. But to build that in those days must have been an absolutely incredible experience. It was let in 1926, and it was... To be built over a period of a few years. Interestingly, there's a couple of neat little things about that construction. One of them was that when they were building it, the brothers found that there was a robin and a nest that was on the construction site on the top of one of the pillars. And being the true family that we are, they stopped construction in that particular area and stopped until the mother had hatched the eggs and the robins left their nest. Today, if you go into Christ Church Cathedral, up on one of the pillars, you'll see a memorial to that, a little robin sitting on top there. So I thought that was kind of neat. Another thing, too, near the end of the construction, Winston Churchill was visiting, and... my grandfather mentioned to us that Winston came up and he presented his union card, and as a result, he was allowed on site, and he walked up the ladder up to the top, and they viewed around it, and they wanted him to put in a ceremonial stone on one of the corners. And so in true fashion... he goes up there and he takes the mud and puts it around the stone and lays the stone and puts it off after and commented about the fact that the mud was a little stiff that day. So obviously he was a man that knew what he was talking about.
but a matter of personal choice.
It was quite something, and you know, to have Winston Churchill come during that, and they consecrated it and opened the new cathedral in 1929. But what a marvel! I go by that building today, and it just awes me how they managed to build that.
The stone that's used in that building, is that from Newcastle Island?
I think so, but I'm not 100%.
My understanding is Newcastle, I believe it's Newcastle sandstone that building's built out of. So it is just a beautiful piece of art. Of course, anybody who's been by there is familiar with it.
You remember when we had our 100th anniversary of the family in 1989, we went down into the basement, and there's the big cement slab that commemorated the fact the family had built it.
Yeah, it was a wonderful day. I remember that. It was 1989. 100th anniversary. Now, Dwayne, you've got some other buildings that you want to talk about?
One quick one. Any of you that go to through Ladysmith would know that there's an old post office there. It was actually a post office and customs building. That was the first building that the family built outside of Victoria back in, I think, 1909, 1910. And it was, it's still there today. It's an antique store, and it was built in 1907, Daryl says. Okay, beautiful building. I went through that one too, and some of the old counters and that they had in the original customs building are actually downstairs, and I was talking to the owner. The second one, the third one I was going to mention is the Rennie and Taylor building bakery on the corner of Gladstone and Fernwood, which is kitty corner or cross street from the Belfry Theater across Gladstone. That was built for the Rennie and Taylor brothers. And they built that back in, when was that, Daryl?
Back in 1910,
yeah. It's a beautiful building. It was meant as a bakery, and they built that. And some of the things that I was laughing at here, my grandfather, he says, I worked 4 hours at Rennie and Taylor building bricklaying. We had a fine day, but cloudy and threatened for rain. And he put down the cost. He says, repairing overall suit. This is his own suit, I guess. 25 cents. Haircut and neck shave. 35 cents. Two screwdrivers and one pair of pliers. 30 cents. Repairing chain on motor. 25 cents. Washing. 55 cents. Every time I go through Grandpa's diaries, we find all those little notes about how much he spent. So that's why when you're talking about a $300,000 building like Christchurch Cathedral, something like this
puts it in perspective.
A question for you, Dwayne. Now it says repair chain on bicycle.
Yeah, I guess they
was that his motorcycle?
Motorcycle. That was probably the Indian that Grandpa broke.
I actually have photograph of our grandfather sitting on, I think, about a 1912 or a 1913 Indian. It's a little pedal start. Yep. With an acetylene gas tank on the top for the flash or for the light, for the headlight.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys know why he had to stop? He had to sell the motorcycle?
Well, no, he got married.
No, but he got married to our grandmother. But he was out for a little ride one day, and grandfather's biggest trick was he would not stop at stop signs. He would not stop at red lights. In fact, towards his end driving career, he was politely asked to get off the road.
Oh.
He was out on the motorcycle one day with grandma on the rear and came around the corner and drove right into the horse carriage of the fire chief, who was on his way to a fire, and dumped the bike and my grandmother on the back, at which point she said, "You're selling the bike."
Well, that's very good. I think that was the first time I've heard that.
That was the end of that. That's kind of neat that, you know, we're three brothers, but we have all these different stories that have been shared with us by our families over the years. We've got these certainly different recollections.
It just depends on which one of us was over visiting our grandmother that day, which is not too far from her parents' house. I will take note on the fact that the picture of the bike that sits on my wall of the motorcycle in question actually does have quite a few nicks and dings on it to verify that.
Yeah.
He was actually well-renowned for his bad driving habits, even up to the day when he actually gave up his, what was it, a red 1949 Pontiac?
Something like that.
He was constantly being in the shop being repaired for something he'd done with it.
Not a good driver, and wasn't the first person that they let go.
But he was a great stonemason.
Excellent stonemason, and a good musician, too.
Absolutely. In fact, he played the violin.
In fact, he passed away at choir practice at Belmont Avenue United Church.
Yeah, he was going for the Easter service. They were practicing.
That's right.
I got his violin.
Oh, you lucky guy. All right, well, that's sort of more of our family history. We've got some other buildings and different things we're going to be talking about, and we've also got another trivia question, so we're going to come back after the break with that one. So we spoke earlier about the two pieces of history we talked about Saturday Night Live. We also talked about the great search for the Loch Ness Monster and how it became an unsuccessful search. Today was celebrated the third day and the last day of the search, and they decided at that point that there was no real Loch Ness Monster. So we're going to go into the break here in a second, but here's the question it's going to be for you when we come out from the break, and that question is going to be the Loch Ness Monster. What is its nickname? So if you've got an answer for that, we've got, let's see, a couple of gift certificates here for the Beacon Drive-In. 50 years old this year. Beacon Drive-In's been around. Did you guys know that? Yeah. Well, so we've got a couple of gift certificates for them. So if you can tell us the name, the nickname of the Loch Ness Monster, and we'll come to that right after the break. We're going to a break right now, as I mentioned. If you've got any questions for myself or my brothers, if you have any stories about any of the buildings that we're talking about, if you've got a Christchurch Cathedral memory, if you've been into the Reaney and Taylor building, or any other ones that are coming up on the show, please feel free to give us a call and share some memories that you have or any observations you might have found along the way. The number in the studio here is 250-386-1161. And of course, if you're on your cell, and please don't drive while you're calling us, pull over. We appreciate that. It's a safety issue. Call us on your cell at *1070. We'll pay you the charges. And we'll come back with some more history of the Parfitt family in Victoria and some of the buildings they built and the answer to our trivia question right after this.
Imagine your next event held in an 1889 courtroom at the Maritime Museum. Rent the courtroom, complete with judge's bench, prisoner's dock, and witness stand. Groups of up to 75 people. The reading room with a nautical flair is available for up to 15 people. And the entire museum is available for stand-up receptions, business meetings, lectures, seminars, and small private dinner parties. For information, call 385-4222, extension 102.
Just arrived at Heirloom Linens. New duvet cover sets in 100% cotton, and they're priced just right.
Not only will you love the bright, bold designs, but the younger generation will too.
Twin only $69.99 and queen $99.99. And just when it seems like everything else is going up, we've lowered the price on our feather duvets to just $59.99 any size.
That's in Heirloom Linens in Broadmead Village and in Millstream Village across from PharmaSave.
We only sound expensive.
What do your community leaders have to say about conservative Gary Lunn? Mayor Ted Daly of North Saanich says, "I've always been able to count on Gary. Gary always comes through for his constituents." Mayor Don Amos of Sydney says, "Gary is known for his determination in delivering results." Mayor Jack Maher of Central Saanich says, "Every time we've needed him, he's been there. I'm 100% behind Gary Lunn." For Saanich Gulf Islands, the choice is clear. On October 14th, re-elect conservative Gary Lunn. Authorized by the official agent for the Saanich Peninsula Citizens Council.
CFAX Sports presents the Vancouver Canucks and the Calgary Flames.
HSBC Vancouver Canucks Hockey.
Back to Sallow with room, slap shot, scores! There it is! The first! On the road or in the garage, you can follow the Canucks here on CFAX 1070.
HSBC Vancouver Canucks Hockey. All season long.
Once again, it's the Canucks and Flames from Calgary tonight. Our pregame show here on CFAX begins at 6.
Your world in 30 minutes. Your world in 30 minutes. Catch the CFAX Noon Edition every weekday right here on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. I'm Glenn Parfitt sitting in today for Susan Woods. Susan's off for a few weeks running for city council. And find out more about what Susan's up to. Check out her website at www.susanwoodsforvictoria.com. I just want to mention, too, that today's show is sponsored by the Maritime Museum of British Columbia, as it is every week, and we thank you. Them for their support of Remember When. Now, I'm back here in the studio with my brothers, Daryl and Dwayne Parfitt. We've been talking about some of the old buildings in Victoria that our family built in the early 1900s, I guess. It's the best, or 1800, late 1800s, early 1900s. So we had spoken earlier about the Reaney building at the corner of Fernwood and Gladstone. But before we go to that, we're going to give away this little trivia prize that I have here, courtesy of our good friends at the Beacon Drive-In, and I think we're going to check with first line, and I think it's Heather that's on the line, is that correct? Hello, Heather.
Hello.
Hi, do you happen to know the nickname of the Loch Ness Monster?
Nessie?
You're absolutely correct, Heather. Good. Thank you very much. Let me put you on hold a sec.
Thank you.
Yourself a nice little gift pack from our friends at Beacon Drive-In. And thank you so much for calling in and listening to the show.
Thank you. It's an interesting show.
Thank you very much. And Nessie was the nickname of the Loch Ness Monster. Of course, that seems almost obvious. But we got that all covered. Now, we were talking earlier about the Renee Taylor building at the corner of Gladstone and Fernwood, right across from the Belfry. But kitty corner to that building was the Parfitt Brothers building. And I think I'll bring my brother Daryl in on the conversation. Daryl, you've got some information and about the Cornerstone building.
Yes, well, that's what it's called now. I'm sure for people that have been around town for a while, or maybe some that haven't, there's been a lot in the paper recently about the revitalization of what they call the Cornerstone building. And this is a project that was taken on by one of the neighborhood groups, the Fernwood Community Center and the Fernwood Neighborhood Resource Group. And if anybody had been by there over the last 10 years and watched its sort of slow and rather painful decay, it was just been a delight to see this building turned around and a real asset back into our neighborhood. And I do thank all the folks there in the neighborhood of Fernwood that volunteered and helped out to bring it back to some of its former glory and maybe even a little shinier than it might have been in the old days. Some nice shops in there. I think we've got a nice little... a little tapas bar. We've got a coffee shop. But I'm going to go on a little bit and tell you something about the building and how it came to be. As the my brother Glenn was describing earlier on, as the brothers had sort of gotten together, you know, when the call came in from the two brothers when they decided that they were going to form the company, Jim was actually sort of the eldest of the family. He had a house on Gladstone. Actually, there's quite a few of the houses on Gladstone that were owned by the family brothers. And these were properties that were actually purchased from the Pierce estate, which was actually an old stone house. It was up on the top of Shakespeare Street. Anyways, it was a very large estate by one of the original owners. Anyways, when they cut it up, they started to sell off some of the lots, and the Parfitts decided this was a good time for them to get in and pick up some of these properties. And as their business was going very well, they decided to pick up one on the corner of Fernwood and Gladstone. But at the time, it wasn't called Gladstone. It was called Chatham Street.
North Chatham.
And as you went, I'm not sure where it stopped from being Chatham and went into North Chatham, but in the 1908 diaries, or actually it was a picture of 1908 that I have, in November the 9th, 1908. And in the diary, it refers to, it was actually Thanksgiving that day. And my grandfather and his brother Jim walked down the property from Jim's house, which was on the 1400 block of Gladstone, to look at the property at the corner of Fernwood and Gladstone that they had purchased. And it was a 150-foot by 300-foot lot. Now, it was a fairly sizable chunk of property. If you drive down there and you go by where the actual building is, and if you drive up Gladstone, you'll see there's a big hedge there and a whole lot of condominiums houses there. That actually encompassed, was part of the original property. I know as a kid growing up, I used to walk by there on the way home from school at Vic High, and the construction yard was still there. Even though it wasn't owned by Parfitt Brothers at that point, they had disbanded by that time, I think around 1951. As I recall, I think it was Looney Brothers that actually were the owners of the building at the time. But anyways, back to the building. In Aaron's diary, in May the 28th of 1910, he refers to estimating the brothers' store in the afternoon. So somewhere in that point, we haven't got all of the information tied together, but it's somewhere around that point in 1910, they were getting started, and we believe in some period in around 1911 is when the actual building was completed, and then their construction yard used to go out. On the backside on Vining Street, one of the brothers, Mark, actually had a house that backed onto the yard, and he was kind of the caretaker of the yard. At the day that it was in its peak, on the very corner of the building was actually a pharmacy. It was called Fernwood Pharmacy, and that's actually where the cafe is right now. And down the side street going up Gladstone was the Oxford Market, which had all the meats and groceries and all the needs of the day there. It was quite a bustling little community with the bakery across the street. We had the obviously the Emmanuel Baptist Church and some other sizable buildings there. And actually, at the streetcar as the end of the terminus there, right in front of the church. Anyways, above the main storefronts, the brick building housed the Parfitt Brothers Construction on the upper level, and that's where their offices and work ran out of. I'd like to share a little story with you about that that goes to our grandparents, whether you remember this or not. I know that grandmother told me this one, that I guess when she first moved out here from England, and it was, she came out, I think, at around 1910, 1912. And she was actually working for a family, I guess, doing a little housekeeping just down in the back of the building. And she would come down the alley in the morning to work with the family. And just up around the corner was where they got their water in the Spring Ridge well. Just up there, I think, on the corner of Ridge and Pembroke Street. And she would carry the water back for the daily usage. Well, at one point, I guess in the morning when my grandfather was going to work, he happened to run into this fine young woman who had just come out from England and had just actually finished her seamstress course. And she was working for the family just getting started. Anyways, the rest is history from there. And in May the 16th of 1914, they were married together in the up the street in the house of their brother Jim on the 1400 block of Gladstone. As well as that that wedding going on that day, it simultaneously ended up being the 50th golden anniversary of our great-grandparents, Aaron and Martha in Carlingcott, England. So there's a little bit of something extra for you.
Yeah, geez, I'm getting it done on the same day.
Well, you know, it was really quite a thing. And actually, as I went through the photographs, I noticed there was a lot of pomp and ceremony. Our grandfather showed up in a carriage in his tux and grandmother came all her lace. And the whole family was laid out there. It was a grand event. There's quite a few pictures. It took a few years to actually figure out that this was all one event. I thought that they might have been split, some of the pictures were split up between a couple of events, but when I started to look at the different faces in the photos, I started to realize they were all wearing the same dress, so it turned out to be that particular day.
Well, of course, in those days, too, you know, when somebody got married, it was a huge community event as well, too, mm-hmm. So that was part of it. Now, Daryl, you've got some information you want to share with us today, too, about one of the other buildings, the Bay Street Armories.
Yes, actually that's another one of the sort of cornerstone buildings of the family, I think, around town. Certainly Christ Church Cathedral, I think, is probably the crowning glory. But the Bay Street Armories is a very significant structure in its own right. It's sort of built in the kind of a military Gothic style. I mean, the towers on the side, the big portico in the front. But I guess the Dominion of Canada today, in between the period of 1896 and 1918, had decided that they were going to erect 100 drill halls across the country. Now, the architectural plans for these were prepared by a local gentleman who was part of the National or Public Works District in Victoria by the name of Lieutenant Colonel William Ridgway Wilson. I left my note behind there. Now, Mr. Ridgway, we'll talk about him a little bit. He came from China in 63 and settled out in Victoria in 1887 and started an architectural career, of which he had his office in the Pemberton building downtown. He enlisted in the British Columbia Regiment of the Garrison of Artillery as provincial lieutenant in December of 1889. Now, along his distinguished career, he actually designed the St. John's Anglican Church, South Park School, Vic West School, Wilkinson Road Mental Hospital, the Bay Street Armory, and the original Menzies Street Drill Hall, amongst others. It's interesting to note that actually a number of these buildings that he designed were actually constructed by Parfitt Brothers Construction, so obviously they had some relationship together. And it's interesting to note, too, that the Wilkinson Road Mental Hospital, which is now the Wilkinson Road Jail, is of a similar style as the Bay Street Armory, with the portico inside and the sort of ridge caps along the front of the building. Anyways, a little bit more about the building. Now, the main entrance to it is actually off of Field Street, not Bay Street. Field Street is a little dead-end side street that comes down there, and there's a little bit of an office there, and the cornerstone resides just inside the door. And on the cornerstone, it reads 1915 in big, bold letters. And then it says Parfitt Brothers Construction, or Parfitt Brothers Contractors, George Jeeves, Clerk of Works, and W. Ridgway Wilson, Architect. Now, the Parfitt brothers actually received the contract from Ottawa in December the 24th of 1913. The 188-foot by 261-foot structure was built for a cost of $251,000, which was a sizable contract in its day. Doesn't seem like much now. I don't think we could buy a lot in town for that much. Anyways, the building included the main drill hall, offices, mess, and officers' club on the upper level above the drill hall, and in the basement, which most people probably haven't had an opportunity to be down in. I recall being there as a kid. We actually swam in the small swimming pool that was down there at the day. It has since been filled in, but there was a rifle range down there and other assorted, I think, rifle repair shop and munitions and things like that. And then they had, of course, all of the guns and other areas up top. Now, during the construction, I'm sitting in front of me with this just delightful panoramic shot. The original, which came out during our family reunion, was donated and resides in the Armory's archive down there. And it's about 10 inches high and about 36 inches long. But in reviewing a copy that I have, we look at the construction site there and the hole that's being dug. And what we're looking at here, as you mentioned earlier on, Dwayne, that the methods of the day are nothing like they are today.
But they sure built some beautiful buildings.
They did. But it's unbelievable for me to just imagine the kind of manual labor that was involved there in actually constructing this. I look at the site, and there may be two mechanized things on site. The major of it being is a steam shovel. Along with that, there's a series of horse-drawn carriages or carts. They're taking the dirt out and removing the way. There's no trucks. There's no nothing. Just a steam shovel dumping the dirt in and guys with shovels. Along to the side of that is a big ramp. And at the bottom of the ramp is a lot of gravel. And at the top of the ramp, there's a lot of sacks of cement. And there's one, which possibly could be an electric cement mixer, because that was used at the George J. School, residing at the top. Underneath that ramp is a bunch of gentlemen with these great big, huge metal hoppers with big, probably 36-inch steel wheels. They mix the cement up top, they pour it down the chute, and away they go. My brother, I think, has something he'd like to discuss
here
at this point.
Nothing to discuss, but we're going to go take ourselves a little short break here, Daryl. Want to thank for sharing those great stories and stuff. And it's always neat sitting with my brothers because we've got different stories from our grandparents. We've all got different things to share, and we're always surprising one another with little tidbits that we've picked up from our family along the way. We're going to go to break. If you've got any questions for Dwayne or Daryl or myself, or stories you want to share about any of the buildings that we're talking about today, give us a call. We're 250-386-1161. Or you can give us a call on your cell. We'll pay the tab, star 1070. We're going to go to break, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Set course for the Maritime Museum and discover the fascinating nautical heritage of the North Pacific. Examine the world-famous collection of ship models and extensive displays of maritime art. Journey through the galleries and encounter explorers, fur traders, and ruthless pirates. Find out about birthday parties for all ages and sleepover programs for children. For information, call 385-4222 or visit the website at mmbc.bc.ca.
Poor quality yard and garden products may be very frustrating. Not when you buy your yard work supplies at Integrity Sales. It's where the professionals shop. Integrity Sales makes quality their priority. They formulate their fertilizer and grass seed blends with performance in mind. Organic sea soil and tools are only a few of the items they carry. So whenever you think yard work, think Integrity. They make yard work fun. Integrity Sales. 2180 Keating Crossroad. Where the professionals shop.
Kohl's Vacuums is proud to announce that they now have in-stock Beam Central Vacuums. Beam has completely redefined how a central vacuum should work, look, and sound. They have models starting at $599 complete. And for a limited time, Kohl's is offering these at premium savings. Beam is Canada's number one selling built-in vacuum. Come into Kohl's and try one for yourself. You'll find out why. Kohl's Vacuums, University Heights and Colwood, the next level of clean.
Do you want to pay higher taxes? More for groceries, gas, heating your home?
Hi, I'm Gary Lunn. This election, you have two very different choices. Stéphane Dion and the Liberals, who want to impose a second carbon tax that will kill thousands of jobs. Or Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who reduced our debt by $40 billion, cut your taxes, and helped you create 750,000 new jobs.
Proven leadership, proven results. In Saanich Gulf Islands, the choice is clear. On October 14th, vote for Gary Lunn and the Conservative Party of Canada. Authorized by the official agent for Gary Lunn.
A fast-paced look at today's hot-button issues. Murray Langdon and Newsline PM, weekdays 3 to 7 on Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. I'm Glenn Parfitt sitting in for Susan Woods on today's show, Remember When. And today we're talking about the Parfitt family history. My family, I'm in the studio today with my brothers Dwayne and Daryl Parfitt. We've been talking about a bunch of the old buildings in town. Christchurch Cathedral, Reedy and Taylor Bakery, the Cornerstone Building. And we were talking about the armories just before we went to break with my brother Daryl. And Daryl had a couple more comments that he wanted to make about the Bay Street armories.
Well, I've always got lots of comments to make, but in the... need to wrap this up. I just wanted to give you a few final bits of information about the armories. It did actually was completed, and a gala opening was the official gala opening was on November the 30th, 1915, where the army was thrown open for a patriotic concert. Now, this was by invite only, and I actually am the proud recipient of one of those invitations, and it shows a picture of the finished armory, and basically it was a souvenir, and asked people to come out and join. And final note, in December the 9th of 1915, the building was finally taken over by the 103rd Regiment and the 50th Highlanders, and the rest is just history.
It's a great, great old building. I remember swimming in there, too. I think, I don't know if it was you, how you got down there to swim, Daryl, but I'm pretty sure in my case I got down there through the Boy Scouts. I think we went down
yeah,
one
I think
time
it was
to... To swim, so it was another great old building. Now, I'm going to speak a little bit about another building that our family built. First of all, you mentioned earlier, I think maybe both of you overlooked it. It was Thanksgiving weekend of 1908. The Parfitt brothers started their business, so happy anniversary today.
Wow.
This is Thanksgiving weekend, so 100th anniversary of our family's starting Parfitt Brothers Construction and reshaping the shape of the city.
I hadn't even noticed.
Well, there you go. All right, we were caught up in it. We hadn't even, we almost missed that part. I'm going to speak about George J. Elementary School. And I've got some interesting stories about that. Now, George J. Elementary was one of two grand schools that the school board at that point had decided that they were going to build for Victoria. There had been a real influx of immigrants, and the population was expanding rapidly. So they felt the need for two of these schools in town. Two of them that were built were George J. Elementary, and the other one that was built was Vic High. Now, Parfitt Brothers did not build Vic High. I believe they did some work on it later on after it was built. But George J. Elementary, they started working on it. I believe it was about... 1909. And I should also mention, too, but I'm going to go back to Vic High for half a sec. Three generations of Parfitts gone to Vic High. So there's another bit of history for us. So we had the Vic High Centennial a few years ago, 125th. Some of us were able to get up there and really enjoy it and see our family sort of part of all that. But George E. Elementary School, they started working on it in 1909. When they first put the proposal together, it was originally called the Central Park School. And it was up until about 6 months before it opened, and they decided to change the name to George J. It also featured one of the city's first electrical concrete mixers, which we're slowly figuring out between myself and my brothers here was probably shared between George J. and looks like Bay Street Armories at that time, because there was an awful lot of mud being needed in both the sites, and they're close enough in proximity, there's a good chance that some of it may have gotten sent back and forth, depending. Now, interestingly enough, for those who grew up and went to school here, and I know for sure it's school, I'm not sure whether it's in Victoria, whether it's outside of Victoria, but for those of us who learned to write in school, in elementary school, we used the H.B. McLean method of handwriting, if you recall.
I remember using slate.
And the person... easy.
And that was at Springwood School, wasn't it?
That was at Springwood School, yeah.
The first principal of George J. Elementary was H.B. McLean, and he was the founder of that writing system that was used through all the schools. And I believe it was used certainly throughout the province and possibly throughout Canada. So there's our interesting little note about that. And, of course, that's coming up next year. Looks like it's going to be, it says 1911. It officially opened, but it started construction in 1909. So it's going to be coming up on its 100th anniversary here pretty darn quick. We also wanted to mention some of the other buildings, Parfitt Brother buildings that were built in town, as we like to call them anyway. The Colonial Inn, located at 270 Government Street. They also built that in 1911. So a lot of projects going on at that time. Now, for all of you wondering, the Colonial Inn, where the heck is that? That is now the James Bay Inn, and that was originally built under that name. Some of the other buildings around town of note are the Victoria Information Center in the Inner Harbor. Originally was built by Parfitt Brothers for as a contract from Imperial Oil, and was a gas station on top.
Yeah, and it had Imperial Oil right along the top of the tower.
It had Esso. It had Esso on the tower, and the sign would flash ESSO, and it would say Esso. And that was after the original, which had Imperial first, and then they took that one down and put Esso on later on, and those were the flashing signs.
I remember that.
The gas station's pumps were up top and down below, where I guess Milestones is or where have you, where the garages were. Now, interestingly enough, in 1929, Aaron Parfitt's son Ray was up on the top of that tower and had a camera, a film camera.
Yes, he did.
And he panned the Inner Harbor and shot from the Humboldt Street side of the Empress Hotel all around the Inner Harbor, shot the Parliament buildings, and right across to the BC Ferries. So he had a real interesting bit of this film, and we managed to capture a copy of it. For anyone who'd like to see some of our film that we've got three samples of it on the web. I have a website locally that outlines the history of music, but I've put some of our own family history stuff on there like this. The web address is www.rcmpsite.com, and that's short for Royal City Music Project, rcmpsite.com. And if you go to the video section, there's three videos on there you might want to have a look at from 1929, I believe, all of them. The shot that we just mentioned from on top of the Imperial gas building, panning the Inner Harbor. We also have a picture of there of a streetcar parked in front of Belfry Theater, which at that time was the Emmanuel Baptist Church. Also have a copy of a plane landing and taking off at Lansdowne Airfield, which of course is now the site of Lansdowne Junior High School. Mm-hmm. So little bits and pieces. There's more of that in our family archive. Certainly all is available in the, I believe, city and provincial archives. So some of the different things that we've got, we've come across available.
Yeah, I was with the archives. I was down there yesterday just pulling out a bit of a material. So it actually is quite a wealth of information.
Yeah.
Okay, it looks like we've got a caller on the phone here. We'll take their call and see what they have to say. I believe we've got Jordan on the line. Hello, Jordan.
Hello.
Yes, you have a comment for us today.
Yes, Glenn. I found it rather interesting because I recall all the names of your great-grandfather, Aaron. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, my first car I ever drove was a 1918 Buick owned by him and bought by my dad. I was born on Fernwood Road, just two blocks from where your property was.
Right.
And I think I may have worked for your dad once, or his sons or brothers. Did they do the Duroid roofing at the Inner Harbor? Were they involved with that?
I don't believe so.
They did do some roofing projects. We won't say for sure.
They did do the Northwestern Creamery. I know that.
Yes, that is correct.
And they did Gibson's Bolodrome.
That's right.
My dad.
Victoria's First Bowling Alley.
My dad laid the hardwood flooring for Gibson's Bolodrome for Parfitts, and he was for years acted as a foreman for various jobs done by them.
Wow, so you've got a real appreciation for what we're talking about here today, don't you, Jordan?
Yes. He also had connections with the Christchurch Cathedral. I have had a picture somewhere around the house of Dad who built the scaffold for raising the bells in the cathedral.
Wow.
And he was foreman on that job too, looking at it. And the picture was in the paper of Dad standing on the scaffold when they were just putting the bell into the cathedral.
Oh, well, that's brilliant. Well, Jordan, those are great, great stories. Thank you for calling in and sharing those with us.
The drugstore which you talk about was owned by a Mr. Clark. He was the druggist.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go there, and then on the corner was a meat market. And just around the corner from that was a Chinese vegetable store. His name was Louis, they called him. And next to that was a dairy. And across the road from that was a McIver's confectionery store.
Wow. Well, you've got a great great memory, George.
Ray and Taylor used to go. I used to go there for bread. And across the road, of course, I used to sit on the curb waiting for the streetcar to come back so I could change the lines from the back to about turn to go downtown again.
Yeah, you bet. Well, but, thank you very much for calling in today, Jordan. We really appreciate you sharing those memories with us. And it's kind of neat to hear from people who were actually there and have experienced some of our family and have stuff to share with us and that sort of thing. It's we're getting a little later on in the show here, so I'm just going to start wrapping things up here a bit. Just want to thank my brothers Dwayne and Daryl for coming on. Dwayne, any final thoughts?
Just one thing. I love that Fernwood area. It's such a history down there, and I don't know whether you guys didn't go to it, but I went to Spring Ridge School. When I was in kindergarten, we used those slate tablets. Back in those days.
I remember walking with mother when she took you up there. You know,
she didn't walk because I had to take the bus. She dropped us up. We walked up there on Chambers Street.
Well, I used to walk up with her sometimes. Yeah. Maybe we picked you up. I don't know. I have some memories of that. But
it's too bad the school's not there. But it was great.
I think that's at the site right on the corner of Gladstone and Chambers, where there's a little kind of a garden. It's not a community garden. It's kind of a little nature garden that's there. But that's the site where it was originally.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and. Beautiful memories from a beautiful time in a beautiful neighborhood. We were so fortunate to be able to grow up in Victoria and be part of its beginning with our family. And of course, some of the other things we mentioned on our last show, touched briefly today, but I want to mention again too, when they came across on the from England on the ship to Montreal and of course on the train to Vancouver, they played their violins and cello. So when they got here, as well as all this great building and other history that they did, they also started some of Victoria's earliest choirs and orchestras. So we thank them for bringing that to the city as well too.
Yeah. Did Vic High and Oak Bay still have a rivalry going on like we used to have in those days?
Oh, never ending, trust me. And it's always going to be that way. Yes, it's very true.
We did their goalposts in gold and black.
Yeah, well, there you go. And I'm sure there's still things going on to this day. I believe they call that tagging, Dwayne.
Oh, okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to give the show a close here. We want to thank our guests, Dwayne and Daryl for coming in and sharing some family history with Parfitt family history with us today and bringing me up to speed. We're going to be here. I'm going to be here at least next Saturday at 1 o'clock for Remember When. We'll be having guests from the Canadian Federation of University Women. They're celebrating their 100th year anniversary. So we're going to have two reps on from the Victoria chapter. Remember When was sponsored by the Maritime Museum of British Columbia. I want to thank you all for attending today. Thank our producer, Greg Forsberg. Have yourself a wonderful afternoon, and thank you for tuning in.
Hi, I'm Susan Woods, your candidate for Victoria City Council. I feel passionate about our city and want to help shape the future for a strong, diversified economy and as a reflection of our character and civic pride. As a progressive-thinking, nonpartisan candidate, I ask for your vote on November 15th, and I'll return your support with hard work and accountable representation. Check out my website for more details about my vision for Victoria, SusanWoodsForVictoria.com. Thank you.
Authorized by the registered agent for Susan Woods.
A CD copy in MP3 format of this CFAX program is available at a cost of $20, including all taxes. To order, call us at 250-386-1070 during business hours or order online on our talk show schedule page at CFAX1070.com.
Visit Capital Iron for a great selection of furniture and home decor. Mirrors, lamps, accessories, couches, casual chairs, dining sets, bedroom furniture, and more. Capital Iron, there's no store like it.
This is CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority.
Expecting sunny skies, cloudy periods today, highs around 13 degrees. Right now, downtown Victoria, we're sitting just above 12 degrees. Good afternoon, I'm Adam Sterling, and this is the CFAX 1070 2 o'clock news update. The province has named the nonprofit organization selected to manage three supportive housing sites here in Victoria. Pacifica Housing Advisory Association has been selected to run the 51 supportive housing units at the Gorge Waterway Apartments. The Cridge Center for the Family will run Magdalen Court, which provides 20 units of supportive housing. And Welcome House Immigrant and Refugee